Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. It's only a brand new episode of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. Welcome back. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a tractor, and I love film. As Paulo Coelho once said, the simple things are also the most extraordinary things, and only the wise can see them. Locke, for example, is set in a car, and it's just a bloke on a phone, and it's really, really good. That's true, it is actually, yeah. Every week, I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Sharon Stone, and even Cred Blambles, but this week, it is the excellent, brilliant comedian, Anya Magliano. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 15 to 20 minutes with Anya. We laugh a lot. We talk about secrets, beginnings, all sorts. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, along with all the other episodes. So, Anya Magliano is a brilliant stand-up who recently tore up the Edinburgh Festival. She'll be bringing her debut hour, Absolutely No Worries If Not, to Leicester Square on Friday the 11th of November, as well as Salford, Bristol, Brighton and Cambridge in 2023. Tickets and more info are available on her social media at Anya Magliano. She's brilliant. We recorded this on Zoom. She's so funny. I really love this one and I think you will too. So welcome back. But that's it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 221 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a TikToker, a stand-up sketch showier, a chicken shop dater, a Twitterer, a legend, a writer on many things that you like but didn't realise she wrote them, and a legendary stand-up who has just absolutely kicked the dick out of the Edinburgh Festival with incredible reviews across the board. Please welcome to the show. It's the brilliant, it's the one and only, here she is, it's Anya Magliano!
Hello! God, I've just clapped myself, but kind of hard not to when you give me an intro that bold.
You should do, you absolutely should.
And I was like, I don't even remember doing half of these things.
You've done a lot of things that you've forgotten and we wiped your brain after you did them, but you've written on a lot of big shows that no one knows you did.
Yeah, I'm under the radar. I'm always on a Google Doc typing away. That's where you'll find me.
Tell me, Anya, we did a gig. You were very funny and very good, but you were also about to go to Edinburgh, which
Thank
you are now
you.
Back from. I had a little Google. I don't know if you look at these things, not that they're important, but you did very well. Critically, you did very well. How was it?
Yeah, I think it's easier to like retrospectively now be like, oh, I am happy with that result in the sense that like, I obviously did care about reviews and stuff, but the main thing that I've realised after Edinburgh is that I'm like, oh, I think I do stand by that show.
Oh, great. Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, I think at the end of the month, you kind of lose faith in everything you've ever said, done, or will do, or have ever thought. And I was like, I've lost my sense of self. Like 4 days after the Fringe, I was like, I'm applying to be a teaching assistant, never done any training, but that's that's like the headspace I was in. I hate children. I don't know what was going
on.
I'm
really thick.
But now I did it again at Soho Theatre, and having a bit of space, I was like, oh, I do like this show. I did have a nice time in Edinburgh. I just got a bit sad at the end because I was tired.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about this a lot on the podcast. Every time I've done Edinburgh, I go completely mad. Doesn't matter how... It gets a bit later the more I've done it.
Mm.
But how late were you into it before you lost your marbles?
Last week. I got to the last week.
That's impressive.
Yeah,
that's
impressive. I was being like super... Like, it was like the most regimented I'd ever been in my life. Like, right. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't drinking for most of the month. And then I had like half a beer halfway through and had to instantly have a nap because it knocked me out.
What time was your show?
My show was at 4:30. 4:35. Nice. Yeah, kind of ideal, actually, because it didn't mess with my eating schedule. Like, I was like, I can still have lunch, I can still have dinner. Mm. And then I guess the show is secondary to that.
Yeah, you've got to have priorities. Of the, how many shows did you do? 26?
I did however many is like every day. I had a day off, but I did an extra show on one day. Right. So it was a lot of shows. But that whole month, I think I did like 31 because I was doing spots and stuff, which is, so I shouldn't speak for that long. Like, no one needs to hear me that much.
Of the 31 performances you did, how many of them would you go, that was a fucking smasher? How many of them would you go, that was fine, that was good? And how many of you go, that was horrendous, I should leave?
I think I definitely like have an instinct of thinking it's good, but then as soon as I get out of the room, I'm like, I start to second guess it. And I'm like, I do this thing, which I think is quite, it's like a protective instinct that I have, which if I know someone in the room and it wasn't like, in my opinion, perfect, I'm like, oh God, that wasn't that good actually. So that they're not like, oh, you think that was good and I think that was bad. I'm like, yeah, that was rubbish. When it's actually, if they then don't go, no, it was perfect, then I start to spiral.
Listen, you shouldn't ever have people you know in the audience, right? That's a pretty good rule for stand-up.
Yeah, I guess you can't really turn them away, though.
I try. I mean, I've made it a pretty hard and fast rule with people I know.
Yeah.
But sometimes they sneak in and you think, you know, I've told this, well, who knows if I've told this. My mum, who I've said is never allowed to see my stand-up, once tried to sneak in wearing a wig. And I know her. I know what she looked, you know, I know her face quite well.
Yeah, it's half of your face.
And I saw her walk down the steps. And it's not like I'm playing the O2. It's a fucking gig. And she walked down the stairs and saw me. We locked eyes and she immediately went, oop, and turned back up the steps. And I called her and said, did you just try and sneak in a wig? I know your face.
Yeah. So she's never seen you?
Never seen me, unless she's got a better wig and I haven't.
Yeah, she's got she's full prosthetics. She's in every
unless
gig.
She's got a wig that like covers like a big fringe, goes all the way over her face. But yeah. Even that, I think I'd be like, cousin, it is in, something's going on.
Yeah, it's just too much, I think. Like, I had parents come to, they came to both sets, because my parents are divorced, both sets of, like, my dad and my mum, my stepdad, came to this year's Edinburgh. And it was, I thought it would be really okay, because, I don't know, in my head I was just like, that's not nerve-wracking. But then in the actual show, I was just so, like, one half of my brain was always thinking, oh God, my dad's having to hear me talk about this thing, this thing, this thing. And it just actually was, I was like, why have I done this to myself? This was the situation that I chose.
And all your stuff is very honest and some stuff.
Yeah, and about them.
All that. And about that. Yeah. I mean, could you do that stuff? Looking in their eyes? Oh, God.
I did kind of prepare them before. I was like, just so you know. But also, I think the fact that it is honest kind of worked in my favour, because I was like, it's all true. So you shouldn't get annoyed about it, because it's just me telling facts.
Screaming at them from the stage. Sue me. Sue me for libel. It's all true. Christ. Well done. Did you go out every night and get absolutely mashed up?
No. I was being so sensible. I think I found it like quite anxiety inducing, being like, there are people who've paid money to see me do a show every day. So I was like, I need to make sure I'm doing the best show I can every day. Because people have paid so much money to be up here, because it's so expensive. Yeah. And I've paid so much money. I was like, no... pint is worth the ridiculous amount of money I've spent on being in this city for a month. So I was like an athlete, you know. I was playing football, like I was going to the gym, nice. I was doing comedy. I was like a monk. That's not what monks do, but I felt like a monk.
Yeah, footballing monks. Like Shaolin soccer. Who were you living with?
I was living with a few other comics who we were in this like uni block, and it was like all flats of comedians in this uni block, which was obviously hell. Because you're like, I just want to walk to and from my show and like have a little cry if I need to without having to be like, oh yeah, how's your run going? Like wiping the tears from my eyes. Yeah, and the beds were awful and the showers were like all overflowing.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Will you do it again next year?
Yeah. Despite everything I just said, yeah, I'll be back. I won't remember. I'll be like a goldfish back in there being like, why is this so bad again?
This is horrid. Anya, speaking of horrid, I forgot to tell you something. Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
I should have told you this up front, actually. Despite all the... Ah, fuck it. You've died. You're dead.
Really?
Yeah, really.
God, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
That's classic me. That's classic me.
Classic, yeah.
That's textbook Anya. I'm honestly not even surprised. I'm not surprised. I've done it.
How did you die? That is classic.
How did I die? It's classic. Do you know, that is the most me thing that anyone's ever said to me.
That's a bit of you, dead.
She's dead. Yeah. What else is new? How did I die? Do you know what I think happened?
Go on.
There was like a huge fight outside my house. A really like sort of brutal fist fight, which I was involved in. And I wasn't the cause of it. I just went in to save like a young woman.
Right.
Who was being attacked.
By a stranger. This is so dark. There's a young woman being attacked by a stranger or by a boyfriend or a...
Just a friend. They were fighting and I went in and I saved the day. I split up the fight. Then
Two young women fighting.
Scrapping around.
Do you know why they were fighting? Did you ever hear the beginning of it?
They're
friends.
Yeah, they were fighting it was something to do with I don't actually know if I knew why they were fighting. It was just like a classic girly scrap.
Yeah, really brutal, as you said. Yeah, like a classic girly, scrap.
A classic girly brutal scrap are the four words that I've ended up saying.
Yeah, classic girly brutal scrap. One of them's been absolutely pummeled by the other. You come outside. Hey, hey, hey.
Calm down. I'm saying calm down. But I have to throw a few punches just to set. And I don't favour one.
Both of them.
Both of them get it. Yeah. Both of them get it. And then, you know, that actually
unites
them.
This is why
you'll
make a great teacher. This is good.
That unites them because they're like, what the fuck are you doing? We're friends again.
Right, okay. So it did solve it in a way.
Yeah, and then I go home and then I get electrocuted by my phone charger.
What a night.
Yeah, horrible night. Classic night.
That is classic night. So you sort of resolved this fight. Got hit a few times, came in, touched the phone charger, and got executed.
This is, I think, genuinely could be in my future. I've got this like sort of janky phone charger that like quite often in the morning when I reach over to like plug in like whatever charger I need into like the extension cable by my bed, I get a full electric shock up my arm. And I was like, I think this is how I'm going to die. But I also think I would have to be doing something victorious or like impressive first. And I'd get through that. And then I'd come home and it would just be like every day like usual. I don't turn the switch off at the mains. I'm like, I'll risk it today. I plug it in. I get a bolt up my arm. But one day it will just go to the heart. Is this too dark?
Not at all. Listen, this is less dark than the woman being brutally assaulted outside your door the night you died.
Yeah, I was like, let's pivot away from this because this was not this is not what I meant to say.
Do you worry about death?
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it so much. Yeah, and I think it comes and goes through phases in my life where I suddenly get really, really scared about it. And like, I don't know. It's hard to know what the like right thing to do, or in my head what the right thing to do is, because sometimes I think with like certain difficult emotions it's like, I need to feel this emotion. I need to make myself sit in it, like sometimes with like anxiety or like jealousy or like those sorts of emotions. But when it's like death anxiety, I'm like, what's the point in feeling this? I just need to do something else. Like, it's not going to make me live forever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I do get scared about it.
Does that thought help you going, well, what's the point of this?
It helps in the sense that I move out of it and start worrying about something else.
Right. Is the fear an empty nothingness, or is it, I've got so much to do, or is it scared of not being here? What's the fear?
I think it's kind of like the incomprehensibility aspect. Just like, I have no tools to understand this. It's like bigger than what my brain can comprehend. And there's not much that fits in that category. but I think it's like, it's also the fact that like, at this point in my life, at the point of recording, like all the kind of grief I've experienced has been like been seen coming. It's nothing has been a real surprise or a shock. So like, I think there's also an element of like scared of other people's death and like surprise death, that sort of thing, plus my own. Like, I don't, there's no death, my cat's death, like there's so much death that I'm like, oh, that's going to be a nightmare when that happens.
Yeah. When you put it like that, yeah. But that's why I say don't. My advice, if you're looking, is don't get close to anyone or anything.
Okay.
To avoid that sort of pain.
What if I've done that?
Ah, okay. Well, I would say, yeah, keep running into brawls head first and hope that you get taken out before the people or things you love die.
Okay,
then cool. You won't have to worry about the pain of losing them.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
Do you think there's an afterlife? What do you think happens?
Oh, I don't know. I think I definitely... So I was so scared of death as a child. Like, it used to stop me sleeping at night. I used to be, like, awake in my bed, just like, I couldn't sleep. My mum would come in. And my mum's a doctor, and she would tell me these stories of, like, oh, they've done... like studies, or like they've had patients where they've died for like 10 minutes and then they've been brought back to life, and these patients have said that they like felt alive, or like they could see the world, they were like rising up about them. She used to tell me these stories, I think, to calm me down, and I think I did find them comforting, because I was like, well, that's sorted then.
Yeah,
that's great. It's medicine, and she's a doctor, so she wouldn't lie to me. And I don't know if I've like consciously thought about it that much in like the rest of my life since then. That was probably the time where I was most like, I need this evidence of an afterlife. But I wouldn't describe myself as like religious or anything, but I guess it's one of those things. And I know a lot of people have said this sort of answer, but like, what have you got to lose in believing in one? But also there's always a part of me that's like, but why would I believe in it if I don't actually believe it?
Well, it's the same as like people saying, you know, have a positive attitude, and because better to enjoy the bit before the disappointment rather than go, this is going to be disappointing, and then also be disappointed. I suppose it's like that. So you could go, well, there's it'll be great, and then it will be. Also, listen, let me tell you something, Anya. It's all right. There is a heaven.
Yeah.
Your mum was right all along. Of course she was right. That's science.
That's science, that's baby. Science wins again.
If a doctor says it, it's true. And also, everyone's having the same hallucination when they nearly die. Come on. These are hard facts. This is science. There is a heaven. You're welcome there. Everyone's very excited to see you. A lot of fans of your Edinburgh show. By the way, tell the people at home who maybe haven't seen your show what it was called. It's one of the great titles.
Oh, thank you. It was called Absolutely No Worries If Not.
Such a good title, tells you everything you need to know about
Yeah, it really does. It really sums up.
It's a really, really good title.
Thank you.
Great title. There is a heaven. It's full of your favourite thing.
Sick.
What's your favourite thing?
My cat.
Okay. There's a lot of your cat. Your cat's been cloned to millions and millions of cats. The sofas are made of cats. You walk on cats. They're fine with it, by the way.
Yeah.
They're all around you. There's cat suits. Alive.
Yeah.
Still moving.
Creepy. I like it.
Yeah. And cats serving cats on cat trays. Anyway, the cats are very excited to see you. They love it. They're excited to see you. They want to talk about your life, but through films. And the first thing they want to know is, what's the first film you remember seeing?
Oh, my God. I've accidentally done, like, the perfect transition. The first film I remember seeing was Cats.
No.
Yeah.
And hang on.
Not the new one.
What film, Cats?
We had a videotape of the musical.
Oh, like the filmed...
The film stage
live
version.
Show.
Yeah.
Wow.
And cats were my favourite animal since I was like, whatever, one. One of the earliest ages, they were my favourite animal. And we had this musical taping of it, and I watched it every night before I went to sleep when I was like 2 to 4, I would say. I loved it so much. I used to draw all the cats. I wanted to do ballet classes because the cat in it, one of the cats in it, does like a ballet solo. And I was like, well, that would be my job. Like, I was obsessed with it.
Have you seen the new Cats?
Yes.
And how do you feel about it, knowing how obsessed you are with cats?
Absolutely, like, horrible.
Right.
Me and my mum went to see it because she was like, oh, I want to see it because it was such a big part of your childhood. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, it doesn't look like it's going to be great. There's all this controversy about their buttholes, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, let's go. And we went and we watched it. And I thought it was pretty bad, especially as a cat's purist myself.
Yeah.
And then she just came out and she was just like, I loved it. I loved it so much.
Oh, great.
But I think she loved the like nostalgia of it as well.
Yeah.
Whereas I was just like, they're ruining Magical Mr. Mistopheles here, guys. This is awful. Right.
Because he has a butthole, because he doesn't have a butthole.
I wanted more buttholes.
Right. In the original, it was all butthole, all the time.
All buttholes. I was a 2-year-old girl lapping up those buttholes.
What? Have you got brothers and sisters?
No.
Loved it.
Well, I've got step brothers, but they're like later, they've come on later on in my life. So I grew up, I have the personality of like an only child.
With none of the excuse now. Oh, yeah. How annoying. I really like that. That's very nice. What is the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier?
I am a crier. I cried like 20 minutes before this call because I watched a video of a young child getting a dog as a present. Animals made me cry. But the film that made me cry the most, I think, was The Truman Show.
Really?
Yeah. I went round to my friend's house. It was when I was in primary school. Like, one of my best friends, I just went round to her house, like, after school. I showed up, like, a bit later. And they were all, her family were watching The Truman Show. And so I started a bit later in, maybe, like, half an hour in. And, yeah, it still, like, emotionally affected me so much. I, like, found it, the scene where he's, like, realizes that it's all fake. Like, I just was like bawling my eyes out, and it was so embarrassing because I was at my friend's house and her like hot older brother was there, and I was like, there's nothing hotter than like a friend's older brother, and there's like nothing worse than crying. So it's like the worst combination of events, and I don't know what about it made me so sad, but it just like unlocked something and I was bawling.
That answer has never come up in this category before, although it's a very good film and everyone loves it. Is it because you worried that what you had grown up with wasn't real when your mum and dad got divorced?
Maybe. I think it was like a sense, I feel what I get really emotionally affected by is like seeing vulnerability in other people. And like that moment is like really vulnerable. Or maybe it's something to do with like the meaningless of it. It's like, oh, your whole life was like so much, so different to what you thought it was. And that's really sad. And I also think, like, I think I have a soft spot for, like, any male actor of that kind of dad-playing age. I was always, like, whenever they would go through something hard, I would find it really upsetting. And that is probably to do with, like, parents' divorce stuff. But, like, any Steve Carell film where he got sad, I would be, like, crying so much. Just, like, all of those.
I don't like Steve Carell being sad.
Yeah, it feels so, like, I want to protect them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, firstly, thank you for taking the what I said about your parents' divorce straight and without going...
I do therapy, so I'm very used to someone being like, and is that about the divorce?
I mean, I thought I was being a bit cheeky, but I thought, right, went with it. Okay, great. What was your dad vulnerable? Did he cry in front of you?
No, I don't know. I think a lot of it was just like my emotions about it. I don't think, like, he was still around and stuff, like, it wasn't particularly complicated. I think it was probably just like, as a child, there was like when I was 4. So it's just like, you don't know how to deal with that. So like, if you just lock it down or like learn to be independent about it, then whenever you see a film that like slightly pushes one of those buttons, it's like, well, it's all coming out now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a great answer. What about being scared? What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
Oh, okay. So I have two answers for this, if you don't mind, because okay. They're quite different types of fear.
We'll hit both and then we'll pick one.
Okay, cool. So actual fear that changed my life was James Bond, You Only Live Twice. There's a scene in it when James Bond has just had sexual relations with a woman and they're lying in bed together and they're asleep. And like a spy or like an assassin comes in and crawls over the rooftop beams and drips along like a string down and starts dripping poison so that it will go down the string into his mouth. And he's lying like sleeping with his mouth open. And then at the last moment, like he stretches or something and they move so that Bond girl's underneath the string and it goes into her mouth and she chokes. She's like wakes up spluttering and chokes to death. And I got so scared that that would happen to me. That as I watched that when I was like maybe like 8 or 10 and I slept with the duvet covers above my mouth every night, which is absolutely bizarre because I didn't have beebs in my house. And also I was like 8, so I wasn't like top of the priority list for like assassinations, but it really freaked me out.
Yeah, we can't know that for sure. What was the other one?
The other one was Boyhood.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the passage of time. When I watched it, I watched it in the cinema and it sent me into like a 4-week-long depression because I was like, oh God, this is inevitable. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm doing a really bleak episode.
No, this is the shit. This is all the stuff I want to hear.
Okay.
So it was the passage of time. That makes sense.
I think I watched it when I was like 16 as well, which I think is just like the age where you're watching it and you're kind of realizing a lot of this has already happened. I'm getting older. Like, what's left for me? I'm 16 having a full crisis about aging.
That's early to have that.
Yeah. I don't know. It just unlocked something in me. And I saw it with like my boyfriend at the time. And I remember he loved it. And I was just like sitting in on the bus on the way back, just like having a full out of body experience. Just like, this is it. This is the end. It's going to be the end of the relationship. It's going to be the end of my life.
Oh, man. Wow. Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Yeah.
What is the film that you love? People don't like it. It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it. You don't give a shit what anyone says.
Johnny English.
Great answer.
In my head as well, I thought of this as like an answer. And then I was like, oh, maybe it is critically acclaimed. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, no, it's not.
It is good. I watched it recently. I had to watch it for this podcast. And it's good. I mean, it is technically competent comedy. It is good.
I don't know if it would stand. I haven't watched it for a long time.
If you like Johnny English, it's really good.
It's classic Johnny English content. Mm.
Total Johnny English.
I think I remember like also is one of the films that I watched with my parents and they were finding really funny, like either my mum or my dad, I can't remember. But right. Like, I think when you're watching a film and you're young and like everyone's laughing, it's like, oh, this is the funniest thing in the world because we're all finding it funny.
That's very sweet.
Yeah, I also think the theme tune to it is so good. I think I've got it saved on my Spotify.
Can you sing it to me?
He's a man for all seasons, loves them and leaves them alone, so alone. Bow, bow.
He's totally Johnny English. What's the film you used to love, but you have watched recently and you've thought, this is no longer for me?
The Prestige.
Interesting. Pourquoi?
So I remember watching it the first time and being like, yeah. Oh my God, what a twist. This is crazy. This is incredible storytelling. I had no idea this was coming. Also, okay, I have to do a quick like detour to explain something about my whole relationship with films, I think, which is that I don't know if I definitely have this for sure, but my dad has it, I think. He has this like face blindness thing where you really struggle to detect faces. And I think I have it to some extent because I'm really bad at recognizing people. And for ages in my life, I hated watching films because I would forget what every character looked like loads. And so I wouldn't recognize characters returning. And I'd be like, there are like nonstop people in this film. Like, it was really confusing to watch.
Just new characters every scene.
Yeah.
Who's this?
Another one. Wow. I think that was maybe also like something that passed when I was young. It was worse when I was younger and now I've just like grown out of it or whatever. I don't really know how it works and I haven't looked into it enough. But I did think like, I just remember being really confused in all films and not, I'm really bad at recognizing famous actors in a film. Like I won't know who it is. So I thought The Prestige was like an indie film. I didn't realize it had loads of famous actors in it. So when I watched it again, I was like, I think I was talking to my flatmate about it. My flatmate is like the biggest film. He's a film writer. He's writing a film at the moment that's like being made. He loves film so much. Any good film I've seen in my life is like because of him. His name's Harry. He's like, should get all the credit for any good response that I give. But we were talking about it and I think we watched it again. And I was just like, they just use a bit of actual magic. The whole premise is like, oh, this trick, it's magic. And then it's like, oh, but also he does clone someone or something like that. And you're like,
yeah,
I don't know if you can do that.
I hear you. It occurs to me whenever I watch that film. I do really love that film, but I am a bit like, so there was like an extra bit. The extra bit is,
it feels like it changes the rules of what the film is during it. The same as the Now You See Me films. I love like a magic film, but I find it funny when it's like, they're like, oh yeah, but also there will be some unbelievable magic in this.
Yeah.
But there will also be a card trick.
Yeah.
I wonder if it does exist on like a scale. I have a friend who has face blindness and they recognize people like via their like identifiable hairstyles, which I guess is like a way around it. But it's probably not something that has had like a lot of research into because it does just sound like you're being an asshole.
Yeah.
Of being like, I've got a disease.
Well, I think I've got name blindness.
Okay.
I think I've got name blindness because I don't remember anyone's name. And people think I'm very rude, but I'm like, I think it's a thing. Like,
it's gotta be a disease.
I know their faces. I know their face. I know who they are. I'm happy to talk to them, but I don't know their fucking name.
Yeah.
Give me a break. I'm diseased.
Yeah, give me a condition, for God's sake.
Come on, diagnose it. It's name blindness. You know what I'm talking about, Lily.
Yeah. I'll get my mum to diagnose you. She'll do anything.
Yeah, please. She's good at that stuff. What is the film that means the most to you? Not because the film itself is necessarily good, but because the experience you had seeing it always makes it a special one for you and your Magliano.
This isn't a film that I've like rewatched, but the significance of the first viewing of it was really big. High School Musical 2.
Right.
I will explain.
Please.
When this came out when I was in primary school, I think, and the first one came out when I was in primary school as well, but we didn't have Disney Channel. Like, me and my mum didn't have like any of the extra TV channels. We just had like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the classics. And so I couldn't watch High School Musical, and like everyone else at school watched it and everyone was like obsessed with it. It was all everyone was talking about in the playground. Like, everyone had, High School Musical, like lunch boxes, like everyone was like casting themselves as characters. And I was just like, I have no idea what everyone's talking about. So then my dad kept trying to like torrent it for me. And he'd like, I'd get like CDs in the post of like a CD that then like wouldn't play on our TV. And it was just like impossible. I was not able to watch it. And then somehow, I still don't know how he did this. I haven't actually asked him properly. He managed to secure tickets to the High School Musical 2 premiere.
What?
Yeah. So I got to see the second one in the cinema at the like actual premiere where they like turned the O2 into like the holiday camp that they go to during it. And I was like, now I've seen it before everyone else. So that balances out.
Did you go with your dad? You and your dad?
Yeah. And we took our cousins as well. And it was just like the best day of my life.
That's very, very cute. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was really, really nice, actually. I'm like, God, I didn't remember that story until I was thinking about the answers to the questions. And now I'm like, I should say thank you for that. That was really cool.
Yeah, your dad sounds all right, you know. Say hello from me.
I will. I'll pass
Harry. And your mum, give her a break. She's diagnosed both of us. What is the film you most relate to?
This is like a hard one. I think I definitely remember watching a film that I thought I was going to relate to because I didn't know what it was about. I got really into boxing and I was going to do like a boxing camp and I watched Million Dollar Baby on the plane on the way there because no one told me what it was.
No one told you where it goes. Yeah. Me? That's, oh God, I hope that's not me.
And I just got off the plane like, oh fuck, I've got to do a month of this now.
Really, where was it?
Thailand. I went to do boxing in Thailand. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
For a month.
How was it?
It was really cool. I loved it.
Yeah.
It was a mad experience. It's like 2 hours minimum of boxing a day, but you can do four plus like other stuff. But it's just like in a tiny camp in the middle of like a town 4 hours away from Bangkok with like no one else there other than the people doing the camp, like everyone else is local.
People?
About like 40, I think. It did change because you could do it for different lengths of time. So like I was there for a month, but some people just came for like 2 weeks and stuff. Yeah.
When was this?
January 2020. Yeah.
Did you make friends for life?
Yeah, I'm still in a few group chats. So because everyone was from all over the, like it was such a mixed group of people, all people who were like running from something in their lives, obviously, because they all had to go. Or like you don't do something like that without being trying to solve some sort of crisis.
Yeah. Did it solve yours?
Yeah, it did actually. Like it's funny because I have ended up mentioning the camp on podcasts and stuff, but like the story is too bleak of like why I went there, but it was just like a really bad end of the year where I had to quit my job. I was just having a really rough time, and then I was like, I want to do boxing and I want to go somewhere hot. And then I was like, Thai boxing, that feels like a thing. And I just googled it and then just like booked a camp and went.
Had you done any boxing before that?
I'd done like Box Fit, I think, the sort of like fitness boxing classes, and I was like, I like the feeling of hitting things.
Was it same standard, you and everyone? Was it
no,
like
there was,
standards?
It was quite a mix, but they were all Thai, the boxers, obviously, and they didn't really speak English. It was all quite limited, like the way you were being trained. But what was quite funny was that, like, I think some of this is on me. I should have known this, but I started following the instructions and they were all teaching like standard, like right-handed boxing, but I'm left-handed. So I did 3 weeks of right-handed boxing. And then in the fourth week, in one session, I like just did the other punch by accident. And the guy was like, hang on a second. And he like made me switch. And then like suddenly I could hit really, really hard. And he was like,
wow.
Obviously he wasn't speaking English, but I could tell he was like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, why have you done 3 weeks backwards?
Oh, wow. Are you good now?
Yeah, I'm still doing it. I'm not like, I obviously stopped during the pandemic. I just couldn't find the time with gigging and stuff because the place near where I lived did classes only in the evenings and I was going out in the evenings to do comedy. But I want to get back into it now because I want to fight people.
Right. So you going out into that brawl in the street before you died was pretty average for you. You were like
subconscious.
Yeah, great. Anytime you hear a raised voice, you're rushing in. Two fists.
I'm ready.
Right hand first. You think that's hard? Wait till you see my left.
I don't think I could do it in real life. That's a sad thing, is that, like, I think it's something where I will always want in my head to be like, that's an option for me. I could do really well in a street fight, but I'll never have to try it. And then it would, anytime, like, if I've ever had, like, a guy, like, wolf whistle or be creepy in the street or whatever, not that I would instantly go fight that, but I'm always just like, I'm going to run away now. And in my head, I'll be like, oh, you should have said something. Like, I'm not actually confrontational at all. Like, if I have to tell my friend anything about, like, they've done wrong or whatever, I'll send it in, like, a WhatsApp with, like, four apologies. I'm very absolutely no worries if not. Like, that doesn't match with, like, fighting someone in the street.
Do you want to fight? Absolutely no worries if not.
That's me in a nutshell, I think.
Tell me, what is the sexiest film of all time?
I think sexiest film gotta be Blue is the Warmest Colour.
Yeah. It absolutely can be that, yeah.
I don't really remember any of the film other than the sex in it. And I also don't think I'd seen any, like, queer sex on screen at that point. And I also don't think I'd fully come out as bi. Right. So I think it was, like, the combination of those factors meant that I was just like, what the fuck? This is interesting stuff. But, like, completely zoned out for the rest of the film. And then the sex, I'm like, zoom.
That's funny, back to it. It's a lot of sex, long sex. It's a good film. The rest of it's really good.
Yeah, I should check it. I should check out the rest of it.
You should watch the rest of it. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you know this. It's problematic.
Is it?
Only because the actors have said they were not comfortable making those sex scenes. And so
no!
It's sad because they're excellent. You know, I get it.
Really?
I get what you're saying.
So, yeah, that's retrospectively awful.
You hate to read that stuff. You hate to read it because you go, oh, well, that was...
Oh, that completely invalidates my answer.
No,
I don't want to find it sexy at all. I'll pick Johnny English again for the, yeah, no, for the sexiest film. Sexy.
I don't want to take away your, I mean.
No, that's good to know that. I think, like, that is a shame, and it's also a shame, and maybe it just says something about, like, I hadn't just seen that many non-male gazey female sex scenes, as in, like, two women.
Well, this is the thing. It's a male director. It's all... I don't know. You'd have to do more reading on it. But it is a shame when you read stuff like that, because I do think that film is great. It's really great, and there's so much good in it, but it's a shame.
That's anyway, so fucked, yeah.
That could now go in your troubling boner, worrying why don't
you? Yeah, there you go. No, my troubling boner... I've got full different answers, I think, for that.
Go on. What's your troubling boner, worrying why don't? A film you found arousing that maybe you shouldn't...
Well, it's not the film, but it's characters.
Okay.
Khovu in The Lion King 2 is really sexy. And yes, Khovu, he's like the son of Scar, and he's got like bad boy lion quiff. So it's like bad because I think it's like he's an animal, and I think he's also probably like teenager.
That's okay. I mean, as long as he's, you know, over 16, we'll make him 16.
That's troubling. Also, the sexy Angelina Jolie character in Shark Tale, that fish.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's Angelina Jolie. It's hard not to. I get it. Absolutely fine.
It's funny when they make the animals sexy.
Yeah.
Because someone's job is like designing that, isn't it? It's like putting the boobs onto the fish. What a job.
Yeah. What a job. I often think about that. Like with Jessica Rabbit, when people go, oh, it's just a cartoon, they go, but it's obviously very sexy. It's a sexy cartoon, but someone drew her probably on their own in the office late at night. It's all very odd, isn't it?
Someone's adding bulges to these 2D things. Like, it's a conscious... It's not like an accident, is it?
But I think it also says how basic we are in that, like, it is literally a picture of a round thing. And we go, whoa, that is lovely. that fucking circle is lovely. Look at that fucking perfectly drawn circle.
God, we're so not complex.
No. I'm certainly not.
Yeah, no, I don't think
put a circle in front of me, I'm anyone. what is the greatest film of all time?
I couldn't back myself in an argument about films ever. Like, I'm not, I don't think I have, like, particularly good taste in film, but I think I'll say Dead Poets Society.
That's a great answer. You can have it. No one said that in this category.
Really?
You can have that.
I think
Peter Weir.
I'm judging it on, like, the emotional intensity it made me feel, like the characters. Like, I just remember just absolutely loving it.
Do you know who directed that?
No. Is it some paedophile or something?
No.
I'm second guessing all my answers now.
No, it's a brilliant filmmaker called Peter Weir. You know what else Peter Weir directed? The Truman Show.
What?
Yeah. Look at you, Peter Weir Stan.
I'm in The Truman Show. I must be.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's why you were so shook by it.
God, he gets to my... his emotional language is mine as well. He knows how to turn my buttons. That's not the word.
He's great.
he knows how to push my buttons.
I want you to watch a film called Fearless that he made that not many people have seen.
Okay.
That I think is...
Fearless.
I think it might sort you out. A great answer. What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
The film I've watched most over and over again for a period of my life, I haven't watched it recently, is the Hugh Grant rom-com, Music and Lyrics.
With Drew Barrymore?
Yes.
Lovely.
Which I was like, when I first got like a laptop and was allowed to download one film from iTunes, that was, I think, the one I downloaded just by chance. And so it was the film I just ended up like watching loads, but I also loved it. And I love the songs in it. I actually think I did rewatch it. I rewatched it when I had to do like a weekend of gigs away last year. It was like December. It was in Hereford. I died on my ass at both the gigs. And I was like, I need to watch Music and Lyrics. Like something in my body just took over and was like, this is the only thing that will help right now. And it was quite good. It's like a classic silly rom-com film where you're like, this is ridiculous, I love it.
He's great, she's great.
I've been watching About a Boy for the first time over the past few nights.
Great.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I haven't seen any films. I'm not a very good person to come on a film podcast. Like I
listen, if you're only watching enough Peter Weir films, you're fine.
Yeah,
this is good.
Yeah,
we don't like to be negative, do it quick. Oh please, what's the worst film you ever seen? Anya Magliano,
Where the Crawdads Sing.
Wow, very new, very recent.
Yeah, I was so angry when I watched it because I love the book. Right. So I think it's like, okay. I don't think it's like an objective judgment on the film. I think it's like how high my hopes were versus what direction the film went in. And I was just really sad because I was like, this feels like it could have been done so differently in a way that made me feel like I felt when I was reading the book. But instead, it just feels like it's not the same.
Question, what is the perfect film of a book you like? What do you want when you love a book so much and then they make a film? I would almost sometimes, I'm only thinking this now for the first time ever, I'm thinking, why would you see the film? Like what in your head is the perfect version of, is it exactly what you imagined when you were reading it, or is it a new way of looking at the book that surprises you and makes you see it in a different way? Like what's the ideal version of that book?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. I don't know what it is. I think it might be like, I think you'd be better to say the second one because it's so unrealistic that someone would make one that's exactly what's in your head. I guess you maybe want them to make some like cool creative decisions which use the film medium to add something rather than just try and make it as true, like not as true to the books. That is what I was criticizing Where the Crawdads Sing for. But like, I don't know. I think I like it. I think the way a book makes you feel is so different from the way a film makes you feel just because of the way you're engaging with it, that like you've got to use whatever film has to your advantage. Put a CGI dragon in, that sort of thing.
You know, one of my favourite books and films is The Virgin Suicides. I saw the film before I read the book, and when I read the book, I was like the film really feels like the book. The book feels like the film feels like the book.
That's a great example.
And then when you
think
about it, there's music in the film that is obviously not in the book, and that makes that, I think that's the sort of one of the creative ways she makes the feeling of these descriptions of love and obsession and feeling is through music.
Yeah, I guess there's something about that, isn't it? Like, did you say you read the book after you watched the film?
Yeah, I watched the film first, I think. Yeah.
That's quite a nice way around, I guess, because you are like adding depth potentially rather than like losing it. I think sometimes it feels like you're losing it when you watch a bad film of a book.
Well, we're all having a think, aren't we? What is, you're in comedy, you're a comedian, you're a critically acclaimed one now.
Yeah.
What is the film that made you laugh the most, other than Johnny English?
I think it might have been watching Anchorman in the cinema with all my friends when I was like at a stage in life where going to the cinema was like what we did every week, and we just saw all the we saw like Bridesmaids, that's another close call for that. Seeing these group strong character cast films, we'd just be losing our minds, like quoting it to each other for the rest of the year. I think it probably was Anchorman, but I don't touch any of these films again. Like I let them like exist as that memory. I don't revisit them.
That may be wise.
So I don't know if I'd still find that the funniest film.
Yeah. Oh, it's a risk, isn't it? Always a risk.
Yeah, it's sometimes such a risk.
You watch things and you love them more.
Yeah.
But sometimes you don't.
Sometimes you have to let them go.
Like an ex.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, I don't really laugh out loud that much when I watch stuff. So unless I've seen it in a cinema with friends, like, it's unlikely that I've had a physical response to it. So in my head, it doesn't get categorised as, like, funny.
Yeah.
Do you laugh out loud when you watch films?
No, but it's surprising when I was watching Baskets, the TV show Baskets, and there was a scene where the mum drank an entire bottle of... bottle of something until she just suddenly in the middle of the scene downs an entire bottle of, I think, sparkling water until she basically burps, and it made me laugh so much. I laughed for about 5 minutes.
Wow. And were you doing okay?
Something's taking you by surprise. I think I'm very basic. I think if someone burps or farts,
that does it for you.
Yeah. I told you, I need circles and burps. I'm very simple.
Yeah, you're really back to basics sort of guy.
I'm a real back to basics guy. Anya Magliano, you've been absolutely delightful.
Oh,
fascinating and brilliant. However, when you took your Lethal Weapon Thai boxing skills to the streets, when you heard two friends having a lovely yet brutal scrap outside your door, you went outside and you said, I'm a lethal weapon. Pow, pow. Right hand. And they went, your right hand's quite weak. And you went, shut up. Pow, and hit with your left hand. And they ran off screaming into night. And you said, my work here is done. Yet another couple of women I've randomly beaten up. And then you went inside and you went to plug in your phone because you were filming it as well for your TikTok. And you went to plug in your phone and it electrocuted you right into your heart. Bzzz. And you fell to the ground. Bzz, bzz, and you set on fire. And then your house set on fire. And then it spread to the street. And your entire street was ablaze. Hundreds of people died. It was actually a really dark
nightmare.
Anyway, I was walking past with a coffin, you know what I'm like, and I see this blaze. I go, bloody hell, isn't that where Anya Magliano lives? Put out the fire using my own spit. put out the fire. And I find your burnt carcass, there it is, still holding desperately. Your TikTok's still running. It was a live feed. Your views have gone through the roof. You'd be delighted.
Thank God.
And anyway, I chop you up into bits, put you in the coffin. There's more of you than I was expecting because of all the furniture and stuff that's burned into you.
Mm.
And there's no room in this coffin. There really isn't. It's full. There's only enough room for me to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the heaven filled with your cat cloned a million times. What film would you like to show the cats of heaven when it is your movie night, Anya Magliano? Go.
School of Rock.
Yes, please. Thank you. You're welcome.
Best film of all time for me.
Correct.
I think I know all the words.
Nothing wrong with that. What a perfect answer. A perfect film. It's perfect. There's nothing wrong with that film.
So good. So good. Yeah. I can like see it in my head.
You know who directed that?
Who? Not Peter Weir.
No, but the guy who directed Boyhood did.
What?
Yeah.
It's just all the same guys.
You like two guys. And
I like two guys.
You like Richard Linklater and Peter Weir. They're both excellent filmmakers.
Wow, maybe I do have taste.
Range. Both of them. Range. Dead Poets Society, Truman Show. Fucking Boyhood and School of Rock. The range.
Yeah, God. I guess maybe I can talk about my favourite. Maybe I have favourite directors. Maybe that's something that I know about myself now.
You love an auteur.
I love an auteur.
Person. God, you're upset. It's classic. You're always classic. Banging on about the auteurs.
You can't shut me up. When I get onto auteurs, just you wait.
Auteur Magliano, they should call you. Anya Magliano, is there anything people should look out for, watch, listen to of you?
Oh, yeah. I've got a show. I'm doing my show, the one from the title, Absolutely No Worries If Not. I'm doing it in the Leicester Square Theatre on Friday, 11th of November at 9:30 p.m. And that's like the last night I'm doing of the show. It's like one big bang.
Okay.
If anyone wants to come to that. If not, just like the classic social media. I am posting on there so much. so much. But yeah, any of those.
Okay.
Say hello.
Well, thank you very much for your time. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you have a wonderful death and good night.
Bye.
So that was episode 221. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video and all the other stuff with Anya. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but don't talk about the show. Write about the film that means the most to you and why. Maureen reads them. She always cries. She loves it. So that's very nice if you do that. Thank you so much to Anya. Go see her show. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Latham for the photography. Come and join me next week for another hilarious guest. Fucking funny one. Anyway, that is it for now. In the meantime, I hope you're all well. Have a lovely week. And please, be excellent to each other.
Emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.